Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
In this world, bards are frequently killed.
All the time.
Like, it's just the running joke. Yeah. Everyone lives but the bard. Bard always dies first.
Yep. Welcome back, everybody, to another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And guess what, Richard?
We're doing a book review today.
The boys are back in town.
The boys are back in town.
Because that's what this book is about.
Yeah, it's basically getting the boys back together.
The men. The old, disgruntled, retired men back together in the band.
Let's be honest. They act a lot like boys.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. It's boys.
And it's fun, yeah. You know. But
this book is Kings of the Wild. It is book one of will be a trilogy. The book three is coming out, I think, this year by Nicholas Eames or Ames. I've heard it pronounced both ways. And when he was on Daniel Green's episode like 4 years ago or something, he said it was Nicholas Eames or Ames.
Oh.
So that's...
It's an either-or name?
Well, he says it's spelt one way but said another. He's confused by his own name.
Interesting.
So not what? Only is this a mid book, he has a mid last name. I want to preface with the whole mid thing about this book being pretty average. Is this book, I would say, is very particular toward if this is written for you, you will eat it and gobble it up like the little goblin you are out there.
A lot of this book, I think, leans on its references and being able to tap into people's nostalgia, and a bunch of this stuff is heavy to the enjoyment. Yeah. And if you're not picking up on the D&D references and you're not picking up on the classic rock references, it's good, but not as good as it really could be.
As you can tell, we're going spoiler-free for right now. First 10-ish or so minutes to 15 minutes, we'll then get into spoilers, but just keeping it on that spoiler-free portion. You put it well with, if you get the D&D references, if you get the band references, and if it's written for you, you'll like this book. If you're in your 40s, I'd say, listening to this, if you're a rock fan in your 40s who's played D&D, immediately pick this up.
Oh, yeah.
It's written for you. We had one of our patrons, Orcish Dad, he's in his 40s, and he has children. And this is about a father-daughter relationship in the book as well, so it really hits home for him. For others that are, hey, I think we're adjacent to the target audience. We kind of like D&D.
I know some classic rock bands, but I didn't get all the references.
No.
Our patrons helped us out a lot, actually giving us like, oh, these certain characters are a reference to actual band members. And so it's like,
yeah,
okay. And I didn't catch them.
This was our book club of the month in the Patreon. Join in the link below. We have a book club every single month, but it was a bit divisive where the people this book was written for gobbled it up. And the people that didn't, they didn't like the humor. This book's very humor focused. It's going for entertainment. And what would you say a good quick description is of what's the book about? What could someone expect?
It's the Blues Brothers, but D&D, and there's a lot of penis jokes.
There are.
A lot.
Like, more penis jokes than you make about me.
Yeah, I know. That's surprising, because I'll tell a few penis jokes, but this is...
Our totality in this pod, we've made a handful in 100-something episodes.
Yeah.
That's growth. We're maturing.
but this has a lot of crude, kind of more slapstick humor, and I enjoy that. I enjoy that just fine. I like a bunch of different types of stuff, and so humor worked for me. I know for many other people it wouldn't work for.
Yeah, the whole premise of this book is our main character's name is Clay Cooper. What a name. That's a James Bond kind of name. You're
just generic.
Generic, memorable.
It's also not generic. It's a reference to a musician, so.
I didn't even know that. I suck. So, hey, if you Sorry. Knew that going out there, book is for you, because the whole story starts like this. It is Clay Cooper is your protagonist, and he was a part of this band. In this world, there's these bands that went out, beat up monsters, did quests. They were cool. They were the boys. And there's all these competing bands in this world. They're retired. He has a family now. Everybody in their band, they were the best band to ever band, ever. They were basically the Beatles of this book, not actual guitar stuff. Band is in, they had swords and weapons.
They call mercenary or adventurer groups, they call them bands.
That's big clarification. They're not going out there with trumpets, although they do have bards, which are there with them.
Okay, is this a spoiler? I don't know. I just find it a funny joke that in this world, bards are frequently killed
all the time.
Like, it's just the running joke of everyone lives but the bard. Bard always dies first.
Yep.
I find that very funny.
It's great.
I'm wondering if that's a D&D thing. I don't think it particularly is, but I found it hilarious here.
Yeah, bard's always dying, but they're so this band of members with Clay Cooper being our protagonist, he gets a visit one day from his buddy Gabe, and Gabe's daughter is in dire trouble and needs help. And Gabe comes to Clay to say, hey, we got to get the band back together. The boys got to be back in town. Please
We're getting
help
the band
me,
back together.
Come on, Clay.
They're on a mission from God. Okay, not actually. They're on a mission from movie reference. You guys get it. It's fine.
But then does the adventure start? You'll see. Okay, obviously the adventure starts. And you'll see the band collecting back together. And do they accomplish their mission? It's all about there's five characters in this band. And you meet them and you see how you go through this journey. And if you get attached to those characters, if you like their personalities and quirks, and you like the humor, you'll like the book. To me, I am so mixed about this, Rich, where I laughed at times. I was like, oh, cool, neat. And then it's also very, and I say this with love in my heart, very cliche ridden or formulaic. It's super formulaic, and that's fine. Formulaic stuff is why things work, because you follow something that works in the past. But it is very easy to see where it's going, and it's only the only enjoyment you can really get out of it is if the touching relationship between the characters works for you and the humor works for you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I liked the book.
Yeah.
I think the characters are pretty good, and overall, I enjoyed some characters more than others. The plot is just kind of a fun romp in between. I think pacing is actually one of its strong suits.
That's
because it doesn't spend so long on a single plot point that things tend to go quickly. And so you don't really have the time to get bored, which I think with a more generic plot, you really could if it was stretched out longer. So I liked all the... So basic structure of a book is you get the band back together, so you're going through mini stories on each character when they go to retrieve their band member to bring them back into the fold.
Yeah.
One last mission. You have a little story around that person, and then you go on to the next one, and the next one, next one, and then they all go off together. That's the basic structure. And so those are nice and short in between. So I think that pacing really works.
Each one's different enough, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something new and fresh. I see what you mean. Yeah, if you're going to this book, expect to be there for the journey. The journey's longer than the end and finale.
Sure.
So going through it, you just get involved. Don't expect too much out of it. Just go in expecting fun.
Sure.
That's really it. Because those are our overall thoughts. Do you want to hear what the others had to say about this?
The plebeians.
No, no. The authors first. John Gwynn.
Okay.
You love John Gwynn.
I do love John Gwynn.
John Gwynn, author of Malice.
Malice and Shadow of the Gods. Great stuff.
And John Gwynn, this author, said, Kings of the Wild is a rollicking, page-turning, edge-of-your-seat road trip of a book. Great characters, lovable rogues that I genuinely cared about, and all manner of fantastical monsters, all spiced with a sly sense of humor that had me smiling throughout. That's from John Gwynn. And then Mark Lawrence, who...
My boy. My man.
You and him are close?
I mean, he sent me a DM to tell me to stop trying to talk to him.
You gotta say, at least our friendship's somewhat close. We talk to each other.
Yeah, we talk to each other. One day, I'm gonna have a conversation with Mark Lawrence.
Yeah.
Just tell him that I appreciate his stuff.
Yeah. He's great.
One of these days.
Yeah. So that's Chuck Wood's thoughts. And Mark Lawrence's thoughts. He said, I like this a lot, and I could see why it was because it was been done so well. Ames is an excellent writer and funny with it too. I very rarely laugh out loud with books, but I did once with this one.
There you go.
Good praise from both authors, because then we have from Goodreads overall gives it a 4.28 with Patrick Leo, Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews. If you guys know them, they love it as well. I think they both gave it a 5-star.
Wow.
Really loved it. And we also, then we already discussed overall thoughts from patrons, which were Orcish Dad loved it. Shout out to Andrew and John, who loved the book as well. And then Murdy, Kendall, you guys didn't like it at all. They made their voices clear. They hated this book.
If they could give lower than 0 stars, they would.
They would, yeah. This is very much targeted book and humor-ridden book. Humor is so subjective that it is tough. This will be a complete hit for you or a complete miss. Or I shouldn't even say that because for me it was so mid. I'm all over the place. I actually disagree with both sides. I think it is fun enough. It's fine.
I liked it a bit more than you, but yeah, I'm about with you.
We probably rated it the same or similar.
Probably similar.
Let's find out. What'd you give it out of 5 stars? 4.
Overall, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5 stars. I thought it was good.
You did rate it higher. I give it a 3.25.
Oh.
I thought the book...
Unreasonable.
Unreasonably. So for 3.25, meaning it was above average. I thought this was an above average book.
Yeah. Overall, I think the whole package together, I think it's a good book. I wouldn't say great. I leave that for some other books. But I can definitely acknowledge for a certain reader, this could be a great or spectacular book.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it was really good.
Okay, sweet. Yeah, I could acknowledge that as well, to where certain readers could love it, fall in love with this thing, and the same way I would if I saw a couple of these characters where it's like, oh, I want to see them continue and grow. Oh, this would be great. Because then what would you say is the best and worst category for the ratings here?
Sure. I would say the best category would be characters, and worst being the world building.
Interesting. Okay, I would say best is probably emotional impact. For that fun stuff.
I'm tied for those. So.
And then worst would be, I think, the thought-provokingness and plot are less so.
Sure.
For messages and themes, and then the plot-wise. So going into what to expect from this book, we're being redundant at this point. Character-focused, emotion-focused at the very minimum. And the other ones doesn't focus on as much as the world and message and themes.
Yeah.
That seems like we agree, most part.
Yeah, and there are caveats into, actually have to watch the whole video, get our full thoughts on it, so don't take us out of context.
And for those who continue on with spoilers, we will give as much context as possible in these scenes. We're doing the best we can. We're listening to your comments. Most of them are mean. They're good comments. They are. It's the construction criticism, and you guys actually give great advice. You're like, hey, this is how you can improve the videos. Those are our favorite comments. Mm-hmm. And we don't feel insecure at all when you say you guys are doing this entirely wrong. So we're going to give more context going forward with, bring you into the scene if you listen on past the spoiler-free portion if you haven't read it yet. So
let's go right into it.
Let's do it. Spoiler time. This is your warning. Click off if you want to. We're going to go spoilers for Kings of the Wild.
All right. Let's get started with emotional impact. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 3.25 out of 5 stars. An above average emotion. What about you?
All right. I gave it a 3.5.
So similar to our overall rating was the same, because that's what the book's going for.
Basically. That's kind of my thought.
So why overall? Now that we can talk spoilers. What did it for you?
Overall, the humor was pretty funny for me. I laughed at several of the jokes. The characters had... A couple of characters had some really touching moments. I'm thinking mostly Gay Wizard. Mook was definitely the most heartwarming character for me, and I was really touched by his character. The others were pretty good, not amazing to me. So our main character, Clay, I think is a fine character, but I wasn't super sucked into his character journey.
He more so had the moments maybe that hit you emotionally, where him and Gabe, for example, had the moment where Gabe is the front man.
Yeah.
But everyone really relies on Clay. And the portion where Clay and Ganelon... Actually, the most touching portion for me was when Ganelon and Clay were talking about Ganelon's time as a stone, when he was stone frozen. And Ganelon was saying, this is his quote, Ganelon says, "What kind of monster must I be that even Clay Cooper gave up on me?" just kind of showing to, man, he had that self-reflection in the stone that even if someone like Clay wouldn't come get him, man, who am I? I must have been a horrible person throughout my life. Not even Clay Cooper, this honorable guy who would come and save anybody, wouldn't even save me. So he kind of, Clay emphasizes those other characters' moments a bit and giving them more. And that's not to undercut what I just said there, but at the same time, Clay and the emotion there, he's fine.
He is fine on his own, but he is good as a reflection. Yeah. Because those are some pretty nice moments. And the Clay is a reference to, I'm forgetting the name of the actual bass guitarist, but there is a trope in a lot of classic rock is the bass guitarist is kind of the unsung hero.
Oh, yeah.
That often, they're not the front man. They're not doing the wicked guitar solos. They're not the ones singing most often. But they're the knot.
They tie everyone together.
But they keep everyone together, and they're the rock for everyone.
That's cool.
And so they're the unsung heroes of bands.
That's pretty cool.
And so that's why Clay Cooper's like the bassist.
Nice. Yeah. And the bass, literally the bass of the foundation of the band.
Sure.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Huh. There you go. Music reference.
Nice, nice.
So there's little things like that which make the book more enjoyable.
What song are we thinking of? Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Eye of the Tiger.
I'm off the deep end. Watches that. Oh, I thought we were just going to. That would have been crazy if we just started spitting out Lady Gaga.
Just, that's a great song, though.
It is.
It's a fantastic
what
song.
What movie was that from with Bradley Cooper and?
Fault in Our Stars?
Nope. That is so wrong. It's the one in like 2016 where Bradley Cooper and her were singing and they were having a splendid time. It's not.
It's all actually, happy. I think it's a real happy ending. Nothing bad happens.
No. Let's see. Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper movie. Oh, Cooper, like Clay Cooper. It kind of tied in. Maybe that's why deep down I thought of the song because of Bradley Cooper. A Star is Born.
I knew it was something
2018
star.
As well. Yeah.
I knew it was a star something.
You actually were right. Fault in Our Star. Man,
yeah. I knew star something. But
Clay Cooper.
I actually did want to get on to like thought provokingness.
Oh, but before that, I just want to say a couple things with emotion.
Oh, overall. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the running bits and the fun of this book is something like Lady Jane. Remember her? And bandits that will go around and steal from you, but not steal everything.
Yeah.
Because, we respect that. That's your sword. You earned that. We respect your shield. You earned that. And the funny moment for me, just one of these moments that reflects the kind of humor throughout this book, is when Lady Jane and the bandits, they would go around steal from our band. And then after they stole and everything, Gabe and Matrick were like, oh, what a nice bunch of girls. I mean, they made breakfast and everything. And they were just so genuine about it. Like, wow, that was so kind to them. They didn't have to make us breakfast after stealing from us. So it's just that nice humor that I could see really ringing true for other people. That made me smile.
Sure.
So
yeah, I really liked those moments, and again, just Moog just being weird and pulling random crap out of his bag and throwing it at things.
Yeah,
I thought was pretty funny.
Can I have one more example too? Because I think you'll agree with this. On there's other funny books out there that are more witty than they are slapstick, or Dungeon Crawl Caller, which you love and it's hilarious. But the Terry Pratchett's, which is your Discworld, or Hitchhiker's Guide with Douglas Adams, are your more witty humor. And that gets that loud chuckle from it being so smart and funny. And I just want to say, a line like this, so why isn't this getting higher? Why isn't it laugh out loud crazy funny? There's a scene like this, which not a bad scene. It's just one of the, it reminds me of more cinematic humor. I think a lot of this movie follows a very cinematic filmmaking formula where I won't give the whole context of the scene other than, Edwick dared a glance over his shoulder. Is it following us? And then Clay goes, I don't. Clay looked back in time to see the street behind them detonate. Three stories of stonework burst like blah, 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 sundered dam as the dragon charged through a tide of billowing dust. Yes, he answered. Definitely is. Definitely yes. I didn't say that super well, but you know that cinematic horror of like, is it following us? Turns, yes, definitely is. Like that.
It's that moment in Rise of Skywalker. It's like where it was in the trailer. It's like Poe said, like looked like, oh, they fly now. It's like, okay,
yeah. Also,
just kind of
no. That isn't a dig on the book. More so, why didn't we give this a 4-star? Why didn't we give this a 4-5? Just because it was fun, wasn't crazy fun.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm trying to justify both of our close scores on emotion here.
Okay. Fair enough.
We could go off from that. I just wanted to get in the fact that it has that movie humor, but also has that character moments humor, and some hits, some is fine.
Yeah. No, we're definitely probably the wrong audience for this book specifically, because neither of us play D&D or listen, like, know a lot of classic.
We play, like, a game D&D or two, but that's really it. So, but and also, the thing for D&D, I want to play more, but we just don't have a group to do it with.
It also takes a lot of time.
That's true, too. It does take a lot of time.
It's a lot of
time. That gets away from Dungeon Crawler Carl reading.
It does. This video, filming this, is taking me out of Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Well, let's see if we think of the same song, different one. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Who is your favorite? Oh. I was going Puss in Boots, too. I thought we were feeling the same wave.
No, we're not in the wave. No.
Thought-provokingness. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What'd you give that out of 5 stars?
I just gave it an NA. If you made me pick, I would probably give it a... like 2.5, I guess, or 2.75.
So I originally had NA, because for our categories here, we sometimes don't rate if we don't feel the book's really going for that.
Mm-hmm.
For this, I was close to an NA, but I ended up giving it a 2.75, slightly below average.
Sure.
Reason being, I have like 4 things that I thought about with this book that it was going for, mm-hmm. and we can briefly talk about, because it's not the focus point of this book, but one thing is the fatherhood and father-daughter relationship between Clay and his daughter, and it's really pushing that message of, hey, don't just do anything for your children, but do anything for your friends and other children that you do for your own. Kind of extending that message of, hey, it's what would you do for your kid? Do that for someone else's too. And that father-daughter relationship. And obviously with Gabe and his daughter, in that relationship. And also there was this quote that Clay says in his head. So it goes, what was it about fathers, Clay wondered, that compelled so many of them to test their children, to insist that a daughter or a son prove themselves worthy of a love their mother offered without condition? So it's really looking at fatherhood a lot in this book, and that's a central theme. And I get the why you didn't rate it, because it's more going for entertainment. But I thought it was necessary enough to discuss that this book really does hit home for some people that have that father-daughter relationship and are just going, man, what a heartwarming message that is, that you can look back on fondly what Clay is doing for his friends and his friend's daughter, and also what he's looking at, what it means to be a father.
Sure. And that was ultimately disappointing to you.
No, just below average. Not disappointing. Yeah, it was just below average, as in it has a lot of good themes in here. I think it's more going for entertainment and that fun. And it's talking about fatherhood. So when I think about the theme of fatherhood, I won't immediately go to this book. It was neat and had a nice message, a good message. Like, that's a fantastic message.
Just not executed as well as you maybe would want.
Execution's totally fine. It's just not a book you're going to go back to and be like, wow, what a theme that's just ever present. I'm going to always think about Kings of the Wild with fatherhood. Mm. But then there's those people out there where this book did touch home. They will. So I think it's present enough to acknowledge. Because also there's a couple other things in there as well. Another message is that theme of when Clay is being asked, are you the monster or are you the man? Like, is he going to be monster or man? Kind of toying with those two things.
Yeah, I remember that and being... I've seen that a lot.
Honestly,
a lot in fantasy, and that's mostly disappointing.
And honestly, the father message I thought was better. That was actually pretty good. But then you had the thing like monster man thing, which was okay, that's fine. That's okay. And then
I want to reference something so bad, but you haven't read it.
Don't do
you
it to
people,
me.
You people in the comments know exact there's only one real monster versus man fantasy book. You guys know.
I feel so left out right now.
It's handled so much better.
I feel like we have a podcast so you could talk with them and not me.
Yeah.
That's why we're here. This is, and you just know, I couldn't do it on my own because then I'd have to edit or something.
Yeah, no, then I'd have to work and I wouldn't just get to chat in the channel.
So I am your vehicle to talk to other people.
Yep. You are my vehicle and also my chain.
So, the last little theme in here that I thought was neat more in the world building section, but to think about, is the change of times and how they're the old band member and they're kind of seeing this world and how the new bands work and what happens with that passage of time. Now, I'm just more so saying all that for this is what the book's thematic elements are. Nothing spectacular to me, but definitely present, good message, done better in other books. But interesting enough to say, here's what the themes and messages are, but it seems like if you were forced to rate it, you'd give a 2.5, 2.75.
Somewhere around there. Exactly. Okay. It's seen it done in other books. More enjoyable. Better to me. But it's there. It's not bad.
It doesn't detract from the book.
No.
But anything... Did you want to say anything? Because you said NA there, so I figured I'd just ramble off. And
something that was nice, I guess, more heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good combination of heartwarming and also funny. One of the funnier moments is, I'm trying to remember the band member's name. He's the king. He's the rogue king.
Yeah, Matt.
Matt. And just his whole situation is tragic, but also very funny, mm-hmm. of how he's trying to escape from his wife. His wife's trying to, like, kill him before, like, he can, or capture him, and basically doesn't want him to sire any real heirs, and so she cheats on him all the time. And everyone's, like, looking at him going, like, dude, Matt, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, don't you know that none of your kids are yours? And he's like, yeah, I know. But I still love them. I love my kids. I've grown up with them. I've raised them. They're mine. Yep. And they really appreciate him. Like, it's a really tragic situation, but it's nice to see how much love he has for the kids that he raised.
That's a good point, because I think every character, besides Moog and Ganelon, so those two don't as much, but Moog has his relationship before, but we didn't see the relationship. His partner's dead for a long time now, and he's trying to cure... we'll get into characters more with that. But basically, those three main characters, Clay, Gabe, and Matt, all focus on fatherhood.
Yeah, and I think Matt's a little bit tragic. I don't know if we get too much into it of, like, why does he stay?
Yeah.
In his situation, kind of go, why the hell does he stay with her?
Oh, why did he stay? Because I think he felt threatened if he would leave. Something like that.
It wasn't... I don't think it's just that. I think it's mostly because he knows that those kids kind of need him. And she's not a particularly good mother.
Yeah.
But so if he leaves, what happens to them?
That's definitely a deeper layer of it that maybe gets dived into.
That's what I read into it.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to imagine, like, why else would he stay?
Yeah, good point.
Other than to be something for those kids.
Good point. Yeah. I like that. See, it has a message there.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah,
it's there. Yeah. It's fine. I like that element is interwoven between several stories too.
Mm-hmm.
But anything else on Thought Provoking this before we go into characters?
No, that's about it.
Characters, what'd you rate it out of 5 stars?
I give it a 3.5. I think the characters are good. Okay. Overall, I have, like, I think some characters are much better than others, so it averages out to good.
We probably agree, but mine averaged out to a 3 out of 5. Okay. I thought it was
real neutral.
I'm real neutral on the characters, mm-hmm. and I think both our favorites probably Moog.
Yeah, he's my favorite. Least favorite was
Larkspur.
Yeah, I didn't think she made a lick of sense.
Well, let's break down one at a time. Go over the main ones. So first, let's go Clay, main character. We touched on him.
I think he's pretty good, but not. He wasn't really compelling on his own. I liked how other characters reacted to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's more interesting, but him on his own and him being the main character, not as compelling as others. What are your thoughts on Clay?
Yeah, to give some context too, so Clay is, as our protagonist, for those who haven't read, if we said that earlier, but throughout the whole story, he is the reflecting character of Ganelon, has interactions with him. All the bandmates have interactions with Clay. And Clay, in the back of his mind, is thinking, like, you know what? I'm here to help Gabe save his daughter, because I would do the same for my daughter. And I would hope all my buds would also do the same. Or at the very least, I'm going to do it, because that's what I would do. That was what compelled his journey, was he initially said no to Gabe. I am not going on this journey with you.
Yeah.
He played a Bilbo. He said, I am not going with you, Wizardly Gandalf, but it was very different. And so Clay says no, but he goes back home. And his daughter says, oh, Uncle Gabe was here. What happened? And finds out about how Gabe's daughter is missing, or Gabe's daughter is in danger, not missing, in danger. And she says to her dad, oh, but you would have done it if it was me, right, Dad? You would have saved me. And that's where he has his realization going on this journey. And so it's very much cookie cutter in that sense of Clay is doing this from the get-go, and he's there to reflect with the characters, and he has some inner turmoil, but it is very... Are you monster or man? Doesn't hit super well, but it is.
Yeah, that's the one that really doesn't work for me, mm-hmm. which kind of dragged for it, because I never really saw him as a monster, really. And so
he always seemed like a good guy.
Yeah.
We never got to see that monster. And if he ever did get in those monster states, it was beating up monsters.
Yeah. So didn't work as well for me.
But then when it comes to other characters in the band, so Moog, what made Moog so great for you?
I mean, just how quirky he is, but he is one of the stronger friends of the group. Like, he's just determined to help his friends. Weird, but also just loving and fierce. I think Moog being this kind of goofy joke character, then finding out his backstory of his lover dies of this disease called the rot, an incredibly painful, slow disease. And Moog is, while his partner is suffering through that, his husband is going through it. He tries to cure it. He's not able to.
Right.
But he doesn't stop there. What that pushes him on is he still is desperately searching for a cure, mm-hmm. because he doesn't want anyone else to have to go through the thing that his husband went through and what he had to watching him die. And so that his life's mission is not to heal his husband. It's to rid the world of that disease. No one else has to go through the pain he's in. That's heartwarming. Like, man, that touched something here. I love that.
You do have one down, something in there?
I got a little something in
there.
That's
nice to know. A
little faint. A little faint now and then, but it's there.
Yeah, that is such a clear character motivation. Yeah. That makes him very understandable. And he's both determined and funny. So he has the mix of, you're not just funny. You kind of have that character that has two very opposite things that work together, where typically you think of that funny comedic relief character is just a comedic relief character. But it's nice when you have that comedic relief character also has a touching, deep backstory that's more serious than any of the other characters.
Yeah.
So it makes those oxymorons more compelling, because Moog isn't just a simple, oh, laugh track.
Sure.
There's something deeper there.
Mm-hmm.
He could have very easily been that, because then you have your character like Ganelon, who is very one note. Ganelon's just your brute force, but then has the layer of he was in stone.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
For, was it 17 years?
Yeah, it was, and a lot conscious. Of years.
Yeah. So he is understandably
like stone.
Yes.
If you've been silent, standing still, silent for something like 17 years,
yep,
and then you suddenly become alive again, I would imagine you probably got used to not talking so much.
I'll be honest, you'd probably be the same.
Thanks.
That is how someone probably would react, which makes his character have less change over time, less intrigue.
I just wasn't as interested in his character, and so to me the character's fairly forgettable. And what makes it worse is him with
Larkspur.
Larkspur.
And right before we touch on Larkspur, you want to finish off with the two other bandmates?
Yeah.
Just touching real quick on Gabe and then Matt.
Gabe is supposed to be the... like he has, I think, a really good moment when they're in the forest. But up into it, is not as interesting to follow along with.
Why is that?
I don't know. Like, he has the central motivation. Like, it's his daughter mm-hmm. that's in trouble. Yet, for some reason, character just doesn't really stand out to me.
Maybe all of his moments are outshined by others?
Could be.
Maybe because with his... are you talking about that moment he has with Clay, where he's saying, man, I'm nothing here. I don't think we're going to be able to do this. And Clay referenced him, hey, you're the front man. You're the whole reason we're all here. That scene?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it maybe didn't do it enough for you because another important thing is the relationship between Gabe and his daughter, of his motivations there. And you'd expect to feel a lot more for the central character of the story. Maybe not our protagonist, but we're doing this whole mission because of Gabe and his daughter. And you'd expect a little bit more relationship between him and his daughter because maybe part of it is... his daughter Rose is her name?
Rose. Yeah.
So Gabe and his daughter Rose, we get to see Rose a couple times throughout the story. One in the orb at one point, or the vision there, and obviously at the end of the story. And for me, the relationship between them two didn't seem any different than, I'd say, Clay and his daughter, mm-hmm. or a father and his daughter. It's not like you could take Gabe's character and go, that's him and his daughter, and no one else can have that relationship that they had. It was very much, I could visualize any father and any daughter in that relationship. It didn't just have to be Gabe. You could have filled in any character, could have filled Gabe's role, and still gotten the job done.
I was just trying to think about what is Gabe's character, and I'll be honest, it's fairly generic and forgettable. Just kind of drunk dad that's kind of disappointed.
He's prideful.
Prideful, I guess, and wants to save his daughter. And I don't know. There's just not as much to him.
Which, hey, totally fine. That's my a lot of this. So you're elevating. You said characters like a 3-5. Pretty good. Good
I think,
for you.
Oh, because here's the thing. Yeah. It's not just the main characters. I think a bunch of the side characters did a lot of fun.
That's fair.
And so, like, overall, together.
About average for you. Good. Then what about our last one? We have Metric. Which we talk about Metric enough about how he cared in the thought provokingness.
I think he's definitely one of the better characters. He definitely has a personality that I can pin and I can imagine his character.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a bit more substance to him. And it's harder to replace him.
I do agree with you. The best Matt character I've ever read.
Screw you.
I mean, I've read two. He's better.
He's not. Matrim Coffin.
I haven't read up to your point, so you know.
Oh, it's so sad.
Know greatness.
You'll never know greatness. You'll never know the glory.
What a shame. What a shame. So then going on to our other characters, you said side characters, also Larkspur.
Yeah. Let's go into that character.
Okay. She might be my second least favorite.
Second?
Yeah.
Who's your least favorite?
Maybe Last Leaf, the villain, is just so forgettable.
Oh,
Last Leaf is just, he wants revenge, he's there, and also the fact that we see Last Leaf a couple times before the finale, like we see him throughout the story, she's like, okay, he's not that threatening to me ever,
sure.
And it's a very basic backstory, which works for, I don't think the focus of this book isn't to have a compelling villain, so talking about this of why we're not giving this a 4 or 5 stars, why this isn't a super high recommend for, or super high lovable character for me, or lovable is the wrong word, compelling character mm-hmm. for me, is just generic villain.
Sure. Here's the thing. I would put Larkspur even lower because I think her character doesn't make sense.
That's fair. Yeah. What do you think about her
character? At least Last Leaf is understandable. Maybe generic and just like a little bit forgettable, but at least understandable. Lastly, just her whole turnaround, Larkspur
yep.
Hard with names. Larkspur being this dragonborn type character, mm-hmm. I know not an actual dragonborn, but tragic backstory of being an actual monster and her in her village and then having this tough facade and then tries to go after the gang, is, you know, mercenary group trying to hunt them down for Matt's wife, and pretty ruthless character, gets hit on the head and apparently has amnesia, which then her whole personality changes to a very soft, timid woman and kind of falls in love with
Ganelon.
Mm-hmm. And then it's later found out that was she pretending to have amnesia the whole time or most of the time? I can't remember.
It was more most of the time. It's more than our characters thought. Like she said to the she said to our main cast, "I've been conscious longer than you think I have," which insinuates she had been not immediately from the get go, but pretty soon after.
Gotcha. And yeah, then she kind of quickly falls in love with Ganelon, and I don't know. I don't buy the switch. Her heart switch when she actually decides to help out the rest of the gang after kind of betraying them. Eh.
Like the love overcomes all that hate we just saw and her entire childhood trauma. And at all the reasons she came to kill all of them was she loved this. Maybe what makes it less believable, it's Ganelon. Like, what the hell is there to love?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
But maybe Ganelon is different behind closed doors. The whole thing is what we see of Ganelon is just very cold, someplace, like, understandably so. But at the same time, that romance, we don't see the romance develop either, which makes it harder to believe the jump, because all of it happens off page. So we're saying Larkspur and Ganelon go off page and have romance and come back, and now she's changed. Maybe it feels a bit unsatisfying because you're going, wait, I didn't see any of that character progression. How the hell did she go from that to that?
Yeah, it feels very sudden and just not as believable to me. So that's why I would say she's worse than what was the name of that main villain?
Last Leaf. Both of them I didn't love. I mean, you have your side characters. Lady Jane was fun.
Was fun. I thought the characterization of Matt's wife, the queen, was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Like, terrible woman. Terrible.
Not the best.
Not the best, but fun on page. Like, ooh, wow. Same thing with a bunch of the other characters. I think Rose was given very little page time, but her personality came through. So I liked that.
Okay.
So yeah, the side characters were pretty enjoyable.
Fair enough. So you liked even the side characters more than the main cast?
A couple of them, yeah.
Okay. I think I gave more of my thoughts and weight on the main cast as well. But overall, makes sense that the characters were good for you.
Yeah, yeah. And most of the band is like good.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, some people watching this are probably going like, "These are fucking amazing characters. What are you guys thinking right now?" Hey, if you guys love this book and these characters, let us know in the comments below. Just tell us.
I think we're going to be very much. This is the hot take. I think most of book two loves this book.
Yeah,
and the series as well. So you're jumping into the hot water.
Expand on that below, letting us know what we're not just missing, just what your thoughts are about the characters here, especially the main cast and your thoughts on Larkspur, because maybe somebody will think it was developed well.
It could, maybe it's a reference to something. Oh, I don't know.
Like a reference to how, as a part of a band,
Yoko Ono?
Tearing
up the band from...
Larkspur's a metaphor for conniver.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Probably not.
No.
But
what did you give plot out of 5 stars? Unless you had something else to say on character.
Nah, that's about it.
Plot out of 5 stars.
This one, I'll give you my score, but I want to talk about it.
Okay. Wait, I'm hesitant. You don't want to talk about others?
Well, no. The others, like, I'm confident on.
Yeah.
This one, I'm less confident on.
What'd you give it?
I gave it a 3.25.
Interesting. I know why you're struggling there. And I might be able to help.
I don't know if...
I think we'll both come toward each other's scores.
Okay.
I gave it a 2.75. So you gave it above average. Yeah. I gave it below average because threes are neutral.
Yeah.
I started at a 3. I went down 0.25. So
for me, pacing, it's a very fun page-turning read.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, a good point toward the plot. Like, it's definitely not hard. It's not hard to read to me.
No.
So being a good page-turner, I think that's good. I liked the first half of it a lot more than the last half of them getting the band together. I think was really good plot. I really enjoyed all those little stories connected together of them getting, but then once they are together and they get into the airship, after that, plot to me was a little dull.
I completely agree. We're agreeing a lot lately with our book reviews, which is interesting.
That's, I mean, a lot of that is the change of our rating system.
We don't understand what we're saying when we give a score. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
My whole thing on that is, I agree, getting band together was cool and fun. That's what the whole point of the book is. The payoff is nothing spectacular, and maybe a part of that is, okay, my thoughts on the plot are threefold, or I'll start with twofold. One, very cookie cutter, and it uses that to its benefit and detriment in other points. And secondly, the build-up to the payoff is fine. I thought the first half of the book had the more fun scenes, and that's why you're a part of the journeys. You like to see the rapscallions and how all these foolish antics have to go back and forth with these boys pretending this facade to be men, going back and trying to bring back the gang and bring back what was they were like in their peak. They were the best ever, and now they're these underdogs who have to make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And the part for me, I just want to start with how the book started and why some of this didn't hit home too well, and then I'll undercut this with what I thought it did really well. And would you agree with this? I think the very intro of the book and very much to the end is, again, very cinematic, or blockbuster-esque. Blockbuster-esque, as in Clay's faced with change. Gabe asks for help. He's faced with this. Clay denies, like the hero's journey, refuses the call to action. Daughter convinces him to go. He does go on to this journey and helps Gabe out. And now that he hasn't been in the game for 10, 12 years, however long it's been, you now get the fish out of the water trope. And I'm not saying all these tropes are necessary and needed for books to work well, but, you know, it follows the next thing of, hey, now he's discovering the world again for the first time. So it puts a character in a good situation to learn all these things again.
You also get one of my favorite tropes, which you get the
retired badass.
The retired badass. I enjoy it. Like,
but you didn't love Clay's character that much.
It wasn't enough. Okay. I liked those moments.
Yeah.
It's my favorite trope, but it definitely is not the amazing part for me. You know, it doesn't carry me all the way to the finish line.
Fair. Okay. I'll skip the middle part. There's a lot that you could go through plot point by plot point, but even in the end, you have Gabe giving the rousing battle speech, all of them charging. Instead of saying for Frodo, they say for Rose, and they go in. It's supposed to be references and fun and all this, and then the very end, you get even the end credits of Ganelon went on to do this.
Yeah.
You know, Clay went on to do this and so forth, so it's very much felt like I was reading a movie, a blockbuster-type script.
This would work well as a movie.
It would work very well as a movie, and I'm not thinking super negatively on that. It's just that that's exactly what the book is going for, and that'll hit home for some people. And did some of that repetitiveness, because after you had the character moments for you, maybe I'm trying to help explain as well, where you had the character and the band getting back together. You liked that because each had their own cool story going on. Oh, Matrick was in this situation where his wife is cheating on him. He's trapped in this castle and da-da-da. And then you had, Ganelon was in the stone and this whole Colosseum scene and all this stuff. And then once you got out of that, the repetitiveness of the plot, you kind of know where it's going after that, of now we're past the fun of the interesting parts that were, we didn't know where the characters would be. So the unknown that you're unboxing that gift and you're unwrapping that gift and going, oh, where's this character? Where's this character? Then once you get past that fun, then what?
I think I actually had a thought on it. The first half, I think it has perfect balance between your surprise and tension and your jokes. I think the humor doesn't undercut the emotional moments in the first part. Because I think there are quite a few emotional moments when they're getting the band back together, but also some of the funniest jokes. Versus in the second half, I think a lot of the jokes kind of undercut some of the tension and enjoyment from the plot. I think probably best example, and this was brought up in our Patreon, in our Discord discussion, the cannibals that they meet. Just being like, yeah, they are cannibals, but they just eat any meat. So they're not going to eat our heroes. They're fine with anything. And so it was like, yeah, that's the joke, is that, you know, just because they're cannibals doesn't mean they eat every human they come across. They only do that if there is no meat. Okay, funny joke, but also just kind of sucks the tension out a little bit. And it's like, okay, and moving on.
I would say the biggest tension-sucking scene for me was when Clay lost his hand. And you thought there was going to be stakes for a second. And I shout out to our patron, Kendall, who pointed this out and reminded me of, oh, yeah, I didn't like that. And was going over how Clay lost his hand and then quickly by magic hands back.
Yeah.
It was almost next chapter of I get that the book's going for one thing and that fun, but if you're going to make a tension moment and make me want to care about, oh, my goodness, he lost his hand or something like that, and then kind of go back into humor and just undercut it a bit, makes it not as super tense or compelling. If you just want to go full fun, go full fun. But it tries to have those moments where it does have those really endearing moments where we talked about thought-provokingness and the message of the story. It does have those father-daughter moments. It is going for something slightly deeper than just fun.
Yeah.
It is going for a layer beneath that. And when it tries to go a layer beneath with the losing hand or something, and then it's just like, okay, now it's done and over and through. Maybe that's why the latter half wasn't super like, oh, going all the way to this high crescendo at the end, because it's keeping that same tone as before.
Mm, I think you're probably right. It's a similar thing with, there's a criticism with Marvel humor that Marvel has a problem with using jokes to undercut their emotional moments.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately it's to the movie's detriment.
Yeah.
Where every time there's supposed to be an actual sincere moment, it's undercut with a joke and ultimately ruins it. I think you have a lesser degree version of that in this book. In that second half, I think some of the jokes get in the way.
Yeah, maybe even go as far to say, if this was never a book and this was a screenwriting thing for a movie, and we would watch this movie, I think everybody would walk away going that movie was average, because you didn't have enough of the time and the page time to really get to know the characters and go deep into them. But if this was just straight up movie, I think everybody would walk away going, oh, that was fine.
Sure.
The added element of the book is you get to spend more time with them, you get a bit more of depth to them, which makes people really fall in love with them. Whereas that that thing I mentioned earlier about that humor scene where, is it right behind us? Yeah. Oh, it is behind us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff maybe wouldn't play as well, but where it does when you're just in love with these characters. So plot-wise, maybe some of that humor and the first half being what you enjoyed more left you with an ending that has you questioning, should you rate it lower? Because endings do matter a lot. What's the book leave you with?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ending is, it's sweet, but not amazing to me. It was fine.
Yeah.
It's like, they saved the day.
Good.
Okay. I mean, part of it is passing on the old torch. You know, they're the big heroes, and the new heroes come in and help the, you know, passing of the torch to the new guard.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's kind of nice. I like to see that. But yeah.
It's difficult to talk when we're very in the middle about things, because it's very easy to have a book review where we can go, this is the shit. This
nothing,
you could talk about all the best
things.
Nothing
is worse for us than just like average. It's hard to talk about because
I could see both sides where, hey, then if we were to go super negative and just really crap on the book, go, oh, look how awful this is. But there are things to take from this that it does it well, but also isn't our favorite thing.
Though I think it's just important for us to be honest about, because I know that a lot of internet, like the internet algorithm is all on extremes. They want the headline of like, hey, this is the worst book ever, or, oh, this was the best book ever.
Exactly, yeah.
But realistically, that's not every book. Most books are average. And so hopefully us, hey, look, we're being honest. It's not going to get us clicks, but we think it's pretty good.
Just, hey, when you see our 4+ stars, you better read those.
Yeah.
It's more so going for, we do want to also read most of the books we read, review most of the books we read.
Yeah.
Rather than just reviewing things that are 5 out of 5.
Or one out of five.
Yeah. So given a good mix so everyone can get the feelers. We're just going to be all over the place whenever we read. And just want to mention some plot moments where we have, you mentioned the cannibal section, them getting the keystones in the end. There's the Larkspur stuff, essentially, mm-hmm. where she's the charmer, the seductress. And yeah, they go through, I think, the moments we already touched on in previous sections of Matrick and escaping from his situation was one of the funniest scenes to me and to you. And yeah, I want to end plot there. I think we covered it enough.
I think roughly. I think I would like to move it down to a 3. I'll keep it right neutral because if just the first half, I would probably give it like a 3.5, 3.75. I think it was really solid.
And that end pushes it down.
The end pushes it down quite a bit to, I think, neutral.
I'm saying
because I would be, because I really enjoyed the first half, and I was disappointed by the second half. And so neutral, I think, is fair.
That's fair. I could see myself going up a little bit. I'll just, I got to rethink it a little bit, but the thing that's just keeping me a little bit away.
It's the ending.
It's the ending plus Larkspur and Last Leaf. Like that, it's that combination of scenes just making me just want to go a little bit lower. But I'm with you. But I could see myself going up to 3 as well. This is how granular we get here. We got to get exactly right. That's all right. World building time?
Yeah.
What did you give world building out of 5 stars?
Now, here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
This score, if I caught all the references, I can see it being like a 4. But because I didn't catch all the references, and I don't, and this is my score, I gave it a 3.
Oh.
Do you get what I mean?
I gave it a 3.
Yeah.
I
know there's a lot more in this book than what I caught. Mm-hmm. And so take my score with this with a grain of salt. Because if you are a big fan of classic rock, you're going to enjoy this a lot more. Because where we kind of go, there's some characters, even background characters that come in and me not knowing who their references to think, okay, they're kind of weird. They come in, cute, and then off, gone. But I don't get why they were there. And it's not really much, I don't see much importance to it.
You don't get all the references.
But if you know, it's really great to see this whole world of classic rock stars and their personalities properly reflected in this fantasy world. And so if you know, you go, oh, yeah, Jimi Hendrix actually would act a little bit like that. You get, like, there's some stuff like that, which would make the world building really, really fun because it's like a fantasy twist on our world and people and real people from our world. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But if I don't get any of those references, and that's on me, it's fine.
Yeah. I totally agree. If you guys understand the references in this book, the world's probably really good for you. I would say even if understanding some of the references, so barring we don't understand all the references in this book, but even going based on that, the book definitely relies on a lot of preconceived understanding of fantasy, preconceived understanding of a generic D&D game to where you know that you have the different classes and this is how all these things that are introduced, the wyverns or dragons and any classic thing, the rot, anything in this world isn't new and inventive on its own. It's using other elements that you should understand going into it, which makes it a fine and fun world. I think the best part about it that we can both understand is some of the history is neat. Where looking at the history of the bands and just how the bands function in this world is a really unique and fun way to work, where the bands of today versus the bands of old, where our old band used to do things this way. Now the newer bands, they're now in these coliseums, they're in these games. And
it's a big, again, the reference of older musicians kind of looking at their newer musician counterparts going like, this isn't music.
This isn't real music.
Yeah.
It's Footloose, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, like, you always have the next generation always has a little bit of rebellion in them. And they, you know, they want to show that they're not their dad.
Kind of like that Back to the Future scene. Oh, you guys aren't ready for that yet. the song. Yeah. It's very much a, what a good descriptor be, it is a hodgepodge of fantasy D&D rock and roll elements.
Yeah. And for other people, be better. For us, a 3.
Yep. Fair. Any enough? More to say on that?
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, that's enough I want to hear. So, pros. What did you give pros out of 5 stars?
Ultimately, I gave it a 3.25.
I exactly agree. 3.25, above average.
Above average. We're thinking the same. I think it was very clear. So, again, I know I say a lot of these things before, but I've read books where I don't know what's going on. And I can't picture things. That's very important.
Yeah.
You know, Nicholas Ames is... he's a good
Eames,
writer.
Nicholas Eames.
Eames. It's Ames.
It's both.
Eames. It's both.
Did you not listen to the whole monologue in the beginning
That's
about his name?
Yeah. He's a good writer because he can actually properly describe a scene. I understand where people are. That's all good. I thought All the visualization, good. Humor, it's very funny. I think the dialogue has some good character voices. Many of the characters, I think, had unique voices. Some did not. So I think when we're getting at Gabe, not as much as a unique character.
You can't hear him.
I can't hear him. Mm. But I could very much hear Mook.
Mm.
Heard him and just how he talks. Love that. Matt, even. I like how he talks. Even Clay. I think he has a pretty unique character voice. I don't particularly need a, Cooper said,
Yeah. So the character voices were good for you, the visualization.
Yeah. Overall, above average.
I completely agree with above average. And when we're looking at pros, to give some context as well, we're obviously looking at things, the elements, like visualization, character voice, how was it written for what it's going for, all this, but that's under the umbrella of how replicable is the pros.
Sure.
And when we're looking at this prose, for example, of it is funny. It does it well enough. It's so clear, and it's one of those kind of prose that you can just read so easily. It's so nice to sometimes read stuff like this where mm-hmm. you don't have to think twice. You don't have to turn back a page. It's just you can do it in one nice flow. It's easy on your eyes, and that's good.
Yeah,
we're kind of judging prose in a way of, does this author have a unique voice like none other?
Yeah,
and
that would
and so
be our 5 out of 5 is. Unreclable prose.
Irreplicable.
Irreclable. Yeah. Ugh, God, I'm terrible. I'm off my game today. I got a headache.
We're both super sick, by the way.
We both have a cold. And
hey, if you noticed it up to this point, you're very cognizant. Is that the right word? No, you're very...
observant.
Observant.
Easier word.
Thanks, bud.
Our brains aren't functioning yet. Running at half mast.
Yeah. Half no. Wait, someone died?
No, I meant like sails.
I know.
Half cylinders. I don't know.
Oh God. So okay, our 5 out of 5 pros
is something with irreplicable.
No, nope.
I can't help me.
Irreplicable.
Irreplicable.
You got it. Yes.
There we go. Thank you. Irreplicable.
Nope.
We're gonna move on.
We're gonna.
Something that basically other people would want to copy or try to copy and just really can't.
Yeah, something where you basically read a book and go, oh, that's this author's book.
Yeah.
It's that
no one else could up. No one else could write that book.
And the reason we do that, because different authors go for different things. Some go for more purple prose, some go for simpler prose. But what we like to look for that 5 out of 5 is this author did something that other people want to write like. Yeah. And we're kind of just going down the line to say, hey, someone might read this and have zero problems with the prose and give it like 4 or 5. So when other people are rating things, just go, there's no flaw. Like, what's the issue with the prose, you know?
A great example is, I think Robin Hobb has such a great, unique style that other people reference other books as like, oh, yeah, that's a Robin Hobb style book.
Yeah, fantastic prose. Or other Terry people, Pratchett, or yeah, Tolkien,
A lot of different times where they'll say, like, they're used almost as...
examples.
Yeah, they're used as an adjective.
Shakespearean prose.
Best example.
Because, but obviously Shakespeare isn't the only 5 out of 5. Yes, he's the GOAT of English, but you have to give other 5s out there. So that was a long explanation for...
Just sure.
It's above average, okay?
It's above average.
It's good. It's all right. It's fun, and this book overall was a fine, fun time, easy to read. We don't hate it. We don't love it. It's one of those reviews where we're just trying to have fun talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's really hard when it's with you.
Yeah, it always becomes difficult.
It's even worse when we're sick, you know?
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I'm just waiting for us to do more Dungeon Crawler Carl videos.
You're just going to be depressed until that
day. I'm just happy we're going to finish that series together. I just know, we're actually going to review all of those books, and that makes me happy.
I'll be happy again too.
We're actually gonna get through it.
I'm gonna end this with a quote from the book.
Lay it on me.
But then again, he supposed, a little embellishment was so often the difference between a good story and a great one. Bye everybody.
Bye everyone.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy.
It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.